Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. With anger repression, we have to be really defensive around anger and upset, really. We also have to deny that we are doing it. There's a lot of manipulation in anger repression, and we'll deny that too. It's really hard, actually, for an anger repressor to be liberated, I've discovered, because it goes against everything that the anger repressor wants. They want love and approval and safety. But part of the kind of covert narcissism of anger repression is to never ever admit it. Not really. So that we can operate from it. And that's what makes it covert. You know, I can't really generalize, but if you go to an anger repressor who has repression and you make the point that they're angry, they will not be receptive. They might not be triggered, but if you can understand about what I mean by not receptive, it's a complete resistance. But because anger repressors can't get angry, we might not be defensive in that moment in a way that, how do I say this? If you say I'm angry as an anger repressor, I can't get angry. So that's going to be a trigger because I am angry. So I'm going to have to finagle that in some way, in other words. And I might say something like, even to myself, I just don't get angry very much. And that might be my defense. See, because I can't get angry or upset at you. I can't say, no, you're fucking wrong. I never fucking get angry. I don't know what you're fucking talking about anyway. I can't do that. So I might have to be triggered or I might have to be defensive about it. And in the way that I could even be very calm about it. Anger repressors can be calm. It doesn't mean they're not having a trauma response. The calmness is the trauma response. So I might remain calm and say, yeah, but I mean, I see what you're saying, but I don't really, when I look back at my life, I haven't experienced much anger. And then that would be my delusion. Because the very fact that I haven't experienced anger is the evidence of repression. But an anger repressor will think of it as evidence as if I don't have repression. See what I mean by not owning it? But that's not the same as like vehemently getting defensive. Here's what I mean. If you go to somebody who represses vulnerable emotions and you say, you know what? I think you're really vulnerable at the core and that you're not so big, bad, and tough. They might bite your head off. They might let you know, no, because they can get angry if they can, right? Do the same thing to an anger repressor, you're going to get a different response. I think you're angry is not going to result in anger. And that's the sort of the story of anger repressors, because in addition to having repression, we have to become really clever with our ego and our denial. I mean, really clever. So you could be around an anger repressor and you don't even know how you're being duped and manipulated and controlled and even groomed by them because of the lack of ownership. I'm telling you, this is the real scandal in spirituality. And there's just so many anger repressors. I'm surprised there are this many people that even listen to my podcast. There are this many people because there's so many anger repressors in spirituality, and this kind of message tends to turn them off because it points right to them, and it pointed right to me too. But luckily, enough anger repressors are doing the work where they'll listen to this because they see themselves in it. But I mean, I'm telling you, if you haven't processed buried anger, this can't sit. I can't imagine how this would sit well. Because anger repressors, you're the angry ones on work in life. You are the angry ones. The ones who say they're never angry, you're the angry ones. It's not the people who you see that are visibly angry. Those people, they have hurt and sadness repression quite often. Their anger is like a coping mechanism. yours really isn't. You've buried something that's very primary for you. It's not who you are, but it's you're so afraid of it that you've kind of made it into who you are by burying that. And because you bury the anger, everything that's safer is always going to look appealing to you. And you're always going to be drawn away from that emotion. So that makes you someone who's really deceptive. But it also makes you someone who can't own that. So the way that you contribute suffering to a relationship is very under the radar and often lacks ownership. Y'all, I'm serious. Do you know how many anger repressors have come to me after doing this work and saying, you know what, Scott? I have a lot more boundaries around other anger repressors than I do other people. And I know what they mean, but I'll go ahead and ask them anyway. I'll say, well, I think I know, but explain what happened. They're like, well, look, if somebody's angry, I'd rather them express it so that we can talk it out and get to the root of it. If I'm in the room with somebody who I know is an anger repressor and they're being fake to me the whole time, I don't like it. In different ways, they're like, I don't like that. And it's because I was that. You know, it gets too close is what it is. It takes one to know one. All I have to say is I totally get it because I too have more boundaries with anger repressors than I do. And those are the people that get angry less than anyone and sometimes never at all. And that's why I put a boundary there. Because the way that anger repressors deal with their anger is like in a very covert manner. I've had groups before where an anger repressor will come in, let's say just an archetype here, female, her energy might be very meek, and all anger repression is different. We don't all show up the same way. But this particular archetype just might be someone who her energy is not there, depression, and she can't stand up for herself in any relationship, has no boundaries, might help people on the side. A lot of anger repressors kind of help people while they're still suffering. So that profile, that kind of person, this is a made up person, comes into a group. And at first, when they get into the group, because they have anger repression, they might shower me with praise or even just loving kindness. And so it's like, oh, Scott, I've really been following your work and I too am an anger repressor and I really want to get to the root of everything. I'm so glad to be here. You know how we do in the beginning of a relationship, kind of love bomb if we have anger repression and avoidance especially. Well, I felt the love bombing when I was doing groups with anger repressors and I wouldn't love bomb them back. I would just mentor them. But what I would notice is like with any relationship, when you get somebody with buried anger who also has avoidance, it all starts out okay until you get discarded. You know, and I'm lucky that I have the clarity that I have and the tools because I get discarded all the time by anger repressors who won't own it. And it's like this, you know, it's like coming into a relationship, could be a mentorship, could be a friendship, could be a potential romantic relationship. And they're all hot and heavy in the beginning. And wow, man, I really love this. And in fact, the more they praise me, the more suspicious I become in the beginning because I know it's a front. It's like, you don't even know me. You need to spend some time with me first. But, you know, they'll shower with, you know, I used to just let the praise go because I had anger repression. You know, it'd be like the fourth session and they're still praising me. And I'm like, okay, but I know you didn't buy these sessions to sit and praise me. And I'm, you know, I have anger repression. So I'm sitting there trying to see what is going on here. Because I know, I mean, the praise is nice, but I have just enough awakeness to know that there's something behind it. But I can't feel my own repression, so I can't see theirs. So I still kind of go along with it because I don't have good boundaries yet. And then boom, inevitably, I hate you, Scott. But they don't express it. And it goes sideways. So it goes from praise and you're the greatest thing to, I don't know, Scott Killaby, there's something about you that I, and it's like, well, first of all, you came in here with an image of me that had nothing to do with me. And that had to do with your repression more than me. And when you were praising me, I had to get my words in there and say, let's just do the work. You would have kept praising me. I had to stop that. And then, you know, once you start praising me, stop praising me. Now you have to feel your emotions, your anger, and you're pissed at Dad. And so here it comes towards me. But you're not going to own it. Just like you couldn't own it when you were a kid, your anger. And you can't own it in your personal relationship, but it creates so much suffering for you in relationship. And it might start out with a love bomb, even in mentorship, but within a few weeks, it's like, that person's kind of missing, you know? Like, where'd she go? I don't really hear from her much. But she's not like in the mentorship stirring up a bunch of trouble. Just missing. That's how repression is. That's how relationship is. It's like, it's like being in a relationship with an anger repressor can feel like, well, I know they love me, or I think they do, but I can't feel them. I can't really feel them. No matter how kind or nice or peaceful or people-pleasing they are, it's like I can't, this isn't real. And sometimes we can't put our finger on it if we haven't done our own trauma work, because anger repressors get away with so much among people who have trauma, because we're the good ones. We're the compassionate ones. We're the empathetic ones. And then so we just blend right into groups being like that. But as soon as we get, or a relationship, but as soon as it gets too close to that anger, here comes the violence and the aggression, but it's so covert. And I didn't see it when I had anger repression, the covert nature of it, the violence. But it's like, let's say this person comes back into the group after being gone for a while and couches her rage towards me that came from her dad in a trigger that doesn't look like rage. It's like a bamboozle, you know? She's like pointing out something and or this or that, but never discussing the fact that she's angry, even though she came here as an anger repressor and came into every relationship as an anger repressor. And when I read those messages of somebody who can't own their own anger, but has a trauma response towards me, has literally projected the buried anger from childhood and made me into Dad, there's no reaching that person, because that person is, they are hunkered down in their anger and denying it. And there's no way to win that battle because they are in control. And they'll deny that too. What am I saying? They're in control. If they just want to leave, they'll leave. And they don't want to say anything, they won't say anything. That's what anger repressors often do. It's a power move. It's like, bye. I don't even say that. Just gone. And there's so much power in it. And anger repressors often have anger repression that they're not aware of that's sitting there punishing people. And that's why we leave, just to get back at them. It's vicious, but it's buried. And, you know, when I read a message that says, well, no, it's not my anger. Like, well, you're fucking lying to me on top of being angry. You know, I can't imagine being in a relationship with someone like that, you know, without boundaries. It's hard in a professional relationship when someone is just lying, like pissing on your leg and telling you it's raining, when you can feel their anger, but they're showing you everything but that. If that's not manipulative, if you don't see that as manipulative, you probably have buried anger. Because I never saw it that way. I never saw my triggers as manipulative, but what I was doing was bamboozling everyone, pretending like I wasn't angry, and then coming forth with intellectual or story arguments that are so distracting and manipulative in a conversation. Like making it about something that it's not. Because I can't make it about what it is about. And that's the lack of ownership that makes it difficult to be in a relationship with an anger repressor. Because it's like, it's the twilight zone. It's like, well, I know you're triggered, but I don't really know how you feel, anger repressor. It's like, if I could really know how you feel, we could probably have a relationship. But I don't know how you feel. When you repress anger, you repress yourself. So all you give me are your trauma responses. You give me your kindness. That's a trauma response. It's not you. And then you give me your trigger when things go bad. And that's not you. You give me your shutdown and your disconnection. I know it keeps you safe, but it's not you. So I never meet you in any of my relationships. That's why I have to put a boundary up until you're ready to meet yourself and to meet me. Some of you, I'm not doing what people used to have to do with me. I'm not going to do it. I'm clear. There's a lot of people that put up with my shit through the years and didn't know how to call me out or didn't have the consciousness to set a boundary with me. I apologize to them because I was creating suffering in my own covert, stealthy way. And I understand your suffering now because I've taken responsibility for it. But now that I'm conscious and clear, I'm not going to just get into relationships with people who are angry and who deny it and then put it on everyone else when they get angry. Like, that's really aggressive. And I'm not having it. If I have any say in a relationship, I don't want that kind of toxicity around me. I don't want your trigger that you can't get over because you're angry at me and you can't express it. Not if we're going to have a close relationship. That's not something that I want. And sometimes a professional relationship is a little bit too close to anger repressors if you're sort of dead set on manipulating, controlling, and even grooming from an unconscious level and never taking responsibility for it. Grooming is done by the nicest people. But if you get into a relationship with an anger repressor, the control is not just one off. It's not just on Sundays. It's every day and every hour. If you were in a relationship with me as anger with anger repression, you wouldn't have gotten in a relationship with me if you were too angry. I already controlled out and boundaried out most of the world from my repression. And then I would get with people in relationship who were safe. And then I would control them by, well, first of all, picking the right people who would not express the emotion that I was afraid of. And then I've controlled the relationship. Now, you see, so we call it preference, but it's trauma. So I would choose people who were safe. And if they started to get out of line and get angry, I would go into a trigger and a shutdown and quietness. And they would learn one way or another through that, don't fucking get angry at me. But I couldn't express it. See? And that's the violence. The trigger is the violence because it's an inauthenticity that we bring to the people that we love. And we call it love. And then many anger repressors will even become like a snake in the grass in close relationships because we need love and we need safety and approval and validation more than anything else, but we can't admit it. What we'll do is everything we can to keep getting those needs met and everything we can to make sure that we still get those needs met. So the way it looks is this. We don't know that we're needing love and approval and safety because of buried anger. Partner or mom says something. We step aside because we can't express what's true. And that's a universal thing. Whether you step aside because you have a really good way to process triggers or you step aside because you're fleeing, it's basically all flight. It doesn't matter because you have to flee in the face of anger, no matter what you call it. When you have anger repression, and people get really clever with that, and they'll say, no, it's not a trauma response. I'm just saying, look, if you get angry, I'm leaving for 20 minutes. No, that's control. I heard a social media therapist say to his followers, look, when you're with somebody who's a narcissist, when they start to get angry, leave for 20 minutes. And I thought, you just damaged so many people by throwing the word narcissist in. With people who were probably hurt and sadness repressors, this is the problem. Listen to this. Anger repressing teachers and helpers like me, we will scapegoat hurt and sadness repressors. We will call them narcissists. We will call them difficult people. They are not. They are people like us with trauma. So when we say to our partners, hey, if you get angry, I'm leaving for 20 minutes, we're controlling them. It's one thing if somebody is going to be physical with us in physical safety, but if we shut down an entire emotion in a relationship, that's repression. That is not wisdom, nor is it love. It's fear, and it's being taught. Don't buy it. Authenticity is the answer. Think about it. How could that be wise? To navigate a relationship with the so-called boundary in which when somebody gets angry, you're gone. That's a flight response that you've couched as a boundary. Be more earnest. Discover where your responses come from. Discover whether you're an anger repressor and whether you have created a set of like responses in your life that are actually controlling, but you've hidden it from yourself, and maybe you think you're just a good person or you're compassionate or peaceful, but there's suffering in your life and in your relationships, and I'm just asking you to pay attention to that really only. Because anger repressors will bamboozle themselves. As long as they're doing okay and at peace, they won't even look into how they're contributing suffering to a relationship until they get triggered, right? We anger repressors are notorious for this. It's coming to spirituality and using it on triggers or when things get tough. Why? Because we're against anger. And in those conflicts, anger can come out, and we use spirituality to avoid the anger. That's very rarely owned. That processing identity is a bypass. And we do it a lot in spiritual awakening. And there's a lot of anger repressors in spiritual awakening. So none of that is a coincidence. That's just what anger repressors do to continue to stay in repression and bamboozle themselves and others to get needs met. You see, there's a turning point. And I'll just leave you with this. And every anger repressor that comes to KI experiences this turning point, and it's a point of no return, because you finally see all of this bullshit. This is control, manipulation, and to some degree, grooming of people over time to make sure that they never, ever express anger. That's control. See the lack of ownership, though, because there's going to be people right now who are upset with me. Right now. Anger repressors are right now upset with me listening to this. That's your self-protection. That's what you do in relationship. You get upset. You become defensive, maybe sensitive or triggered, and you're self-protected. You're protecting yourself, and nobody can feel you. Nobody can see you. Nobody knows you when you self-protect like that in a trigger. Do something more than process this trigger if I've triggered you. Go to the root of your suffering. Do something different. Feel and experience something different in all relationship. It's so worth it. And now that I've picked on you, let me tell you why I do this. The way that I see the teaching is a lot of what I'm going to be doing in the next 20 or 30 years for the rest of my life is kind of like a recovery program for people who were anger and hurt sadness repressors who came to spirituality to avoid it and then continued suffering, may or may not have gotten to the end of their rope and needed this lifeline. That's how it's going down. I mean, I'm working with long-term spiritual seekers who are anger repressors who went in every single direction away from the buried anger and couldn't end the suffering. And have reported to me these same relationship issues. Most of the time, when people start KI, they deny their own narcissism. It's part of what anger repressors do, and we like to shadow that out. So we like to pick on the hurt and sadness repressor who's more overtly narcissistic to hide from our own narcissism. Our narcissism is covert. We are also being false, like the grandiose narcissist. We are holding back what's true, like the grandiose narcissist or that type of narcissism. We are identifying with something false, like the narcissist. And that's in order to get love and approval and validation and needs met, like the narcissist. When people around us do not agree with our victim consciousness or other stories, we find new people or a new community. We find a new supply, just like the narcissist. And it's something that we can't own. Because we like to, as anger repressors who are codependent, pathologize people. And we do that across the aisle. So the aisle is the shadow. If there are hurt and sadness repressors out there who lack empathy, we will pounce on them. We will date them, we will marry them, and they will be repulsed by them because we're chasing our shadows. Because we're not as empathetic as we lead on. It's a false identity. And in fact, we long for something more authentic. And when we see a hurt and sadness repressor who has power and we don't have it, we long for that. Maybe even for that anger that we can't express. See, we're always looking for ourselves. But the empathy that we have that makes us so attractive to people is false because we identify with it. It's like an empathy overload. And so that empathy keeps us focused on other people in a codependent way quite often and out of our bodies so that we don't know we have rage. So when we meet a hurt and sadness repressor, we just might think we've met the greatest thing since sliced bread because we don't realize that we have anger repression and that we're drawn to our own shadow. And then we find the problems with that kind of relationship. It's not just romantic. There's a lot of teachers who are more grandiose narcissists who attract anger repressors. So it's everywhere that these shadows attract. But the key is just on your side, on the anger repression side, you can stop it everywhere because you're doing it. And you have to stop scapegoating the narcissist in order to heal and be free. The more that you get on social media, and I know most of you don't because you do this work, and you make a point that there's the big bad wolf out there. There's a big authority out there. Some teacher, some grandiose narcissist, some bad boy, some dominating this or that. All you're doing by focusing on that is delaying your healing. You can't change those people, but you're trying to. See that? That's the control because you're afraid. And you've buried anger. So you're focusing on other people because you're afraid. And you're doing the same thing that narcissists do. You've got a target, just like they do. The codependents who are going around social media making a big deal about a narcissist, you're targeting, just like narcissists do. Narcissists have repression. They target people. And that's what you're doing. That's the narcissism. Own your shit. Bring some peace and authenticity to the world by owning your own shit. And most of the owning will have to be with anger repressors and spirituality. It will not be. See, the grandiose narcissists really don't come here. If they come here, they become a teacher who's really big and charismatic and, you know, never shows anything vulnerable, you know, that archetype. But they're not here. The grandiose narcissist, they're not really in our spiritual circles. Every now and then, what's here is the covert, a lot of covert narcissism. The real scandal in spirituality is not grandiose narcissism or malignancy. It's covert. The damage is different. In other words, if you have like somebody who has overt behavior, the stuff that that person does in relationship and even as a teacher in some way makes its way to an evidence locker eventually because it's tangible. If you are a teacher, for example, who sex traffics or you steal money or do something, there are witnesses, there's evidence, hopefully eventually. There is never really any evidence for the evidence locker on the covert side. It's too covert. Even though it's the same kind of narcissism, it looks different. So when you meet someone like that, it could be someone who looks very unassuming, peaceful, joyful, even happy. And you think, well, this is not a grandiose narcissist, so I'm safe here. So you settle in with that person, but you don't realize either in that relationship or in a spiritual community, that that person is an anger repressor and that you are. And that the reason that you're drawn to that person is because it looks like they overcame any anger. Like an anger repressing teacher, for example, will almost never show any upset. So you have to like discern, is that because of anger repression or is that because of awakening? And if someone's not really transparent, they're not going to answer it for you clearly. So where's the damage? If you have a peaceful teacher who never gets angry and who teaches to a group of people who basically don't get angry, and if anybody gets close to it, we just allow the trigger, but we never go to the buried anger. So what happens over time? The evidence happens over time in a covert situation. In the overt situation, somebody could rape somebody one night, and in that night, there's evidence. But in the covert situation, you have to wait around for the evidence. Sometimes years or even decades, and that's part of the insidiousness of it, because the damage on the covert side is often disease, chronic pain, addiction, and mental health issues that are never dealt with because, or if they're coming from buried anger. So the science says buried anger creates a lot of different forms of suffering. But if it's not dealt with, then the people in a spiritual community could have all sorts of different kinds of physical ailments and even remaining psychological and emotional suffering that they're never going to get to because the root of it is buried anger. So why do they stay? Because they're getting their needs met in the trauma bond. See, because the teacher is like a second parent who meets their needs for love, approval, safety, and that's what the repression wants. So as long as those needs are met, one can overlook the fact that one has a disease in a spiritual community, especially if the language of the teaching doesn't include how physical things can come from emotional root, how physical diseases are part of the spiritual path or can be. So it's like a duality. We just, if we're sitting in a room together for 20 years as a spiritual community and we never really deal with anger, there's a dividing line in our consciousness. Not only have we buried anger, but all the diseases or addictions that come from that, we have to kind of explain them away. And then there's a lot of shame and a lot of really not talking about things. So it's a silent kind of damage. And you can't put, unless you put patient records in an evidence locker, you can't really see the evidence. And it happens over such a long period of time. Because when you lead people over a long period of time into an avoidant path, it lulls them into not even being able to make the connection between like chronic pain and repression or cancer, because the whole spiritual framework doesn't allow for it, doesn't talk about it, and because the anger is buried and the cancer isn't. Like the cancer, when they go to their doctor, they can study that. They can measure blood tests. They can't study or measure anger repression. So it just quietly keeps creating the disease. And then you go back to your spiritual community. That buried anger doesn't come into awareness. There's going to be a lot of frustration and suffering that goes along with these diseases in a community like that. But part of this scandal really is, you know, with the overt stuff, eventually somebody speaks up because it's so overt. You know, it's like, oh, you're raping people. I'm calling the police. Overt. But it's really hard to speak up in a covert atmosphere that's built from anger repression. I mean, there are no processes that would encourage or allow people to be authentic around things like that if anger repression is driving it. So you have people who are in a community who can't stand up and say, you know what? I think that these meditations that we're doing are helping to keep my cancer around or my pain. Nobody's going to say that because anger repressors couldn't question mom and dad. And then can't really question the teacher. And so then there's this, you know, a quiet trauma bond that goes on for a long time. And that becomes the fertile ground for more suffering, which we can't link back to repression. Yeah, that's already happening everywhere, but nobody does any documentaries about that. Well, hopefully by hearing this, you can spot things in your own life and see maybe you've already gone down that road where maybe you're in a community and the teacher, now that you look back at them, could have anger repression. Just look, it's in people who never get angry. And then that also looks like enlightenment, and anger repressors can hide in awareness. That's what I'm saying. And I mean fully hide. So let me just equip you with a few things to be aware of. If you're with somebody who represses anger, pretty much they're not going to admit it, and they're going to deny it. They might even deny it in a very kind way. It doesn't matter. See, it doesn't matter if they do it kindly or they get triggered. Some people are bamboozled when people can answer a question nicely. They don't understand anger repression. So if you ask your teacher, hey, do you have buried anger? And your teacher says, no, that was never an issue for me. And so there's like very calm, and you don't realize you're being bamboozled. The very calmness that you're seeing is the response from the anger repression. They've cultivated that way of being. If they have anger repression, they're not going to admit it, and they're not going to get angry when you ask it. They might feel triggered. If you sense a trigger, that's probably because you're hitting something. But anger repressors are pretty sly. And all you do is you need a little bit of awakening, and you can hide your buried anger and kind of like dismiss people from the presence. It's like a magician, and I'm telling you all the tricks. Don't accept it. Because really, really, people should be giving straightforward answers on that. You know, do you bury anger? Well, let me go down and see. Yeah, there's some anger repression in that contraction there. Because only the body can answer. And yet mostly minds try to answer this question of, do I have buried anger? Remember, part of the covertness is when you say no, but you don't pick up the skill to check, because then you can continue to be false, continue to get your needs met, and continue to stay with your supply of people who buy into that. I hope this triggers you, if you're that lucky. The people who would not be triggered would be people who are already doing the work. There are some people who are listening and they're just shaking their head up and down. I train them and they're like, I wish you would have said this before and spoken more directly to anger repressors, to them. But there probably will be people who are shaking their head left and right. There's one thing about authenticity is the freedom to agree or disagree. And everybody has it. But I have to say that about anger repressors. We're very self-protective when we hear new information that comes close to the repression. It's like Carl Sagan said, if we've been bearing anger long enough, if you present evidence, that's not going to be safe. And even though what you're saying might be true, it might be safer to just deny the whole thing. And safe means safe. I don't want to acknowledge the anger. And so what might come up is a trigger, because triggers, being triggered at you for something that you say and being defensive or sensitive about it or ignoring you is safer than getting angry at you. So no, there's not a single anger repressor with repression who's going to be open until they start to process that. Why then would you bring it up to them? For your sake, not for theirs. If you notice, a lot of repression is inauthenticity and a lack of communication. And when you start talking more in all your relationships and opening up more, you start seeing people more. Repression keeps people quiet. And it's up to you to do your own work to see the repression in other people. You can't see it when you have repression. We're so easily drawn into it when we have repression. But when you do this work, you see everything and everybody differently. Through the eyes of real love, not through the eyes of I need love and that I'm willing to be false to get it. That's the difference. And it makes all the difference because this is another thing that anger repressors, I see them deny. Go to ChatGPT. What are you waiting on? Go educate yourself. Whatever form of suffering that you have, ask this question. How is this depression connected to buried emotions? How is this belief that I'm not good enough connected to buried emotions? Once you educate yourself, you're on your way out of the covert narcissism. And it's there. Because a big part of the covert narcissism is completely denying it. And the first way you deny it is by denying that you have anger. Because many anger repressors see narcissism as like big, grandiose, and even angry, manipulative, controlling. That's what we are. Do you see that? No, you don't. Because it's buried. You have to go into the body and find it. Don't rely on the trigger or the things that your mind is telling you to automatically disagree with anything that I'm saying before you go into the body with skill to check. Otherwise, you're acting from the same covert control. Surrender. One of the best ways to do that is to start that process is just go take our test at repressiontest.com and see if you bury anger. Then you're on our newsletter and you'll be in our funnels. We're creating funnels to help people with specific issues so they get more education and then eventually more skill to access the buried anger. But taking that first step is so important for anger repressors because we will deny this, you know, our whole lives. And I'm giving you an opportunity to finally get to the root of suffering. It doesn't mean you'll take it because you're trying to get your needs met, but consider it. And then I put a link in the description always for people who just want to come work with me one-on-one. And because these are sensitive issues, one-on-one is often the best way for people, but it's also the best way for the work because you can really teach people and mentor people in mentorship in a way that you can't do in other forms. And so if you're pretty serious about one-on-one, come talk to me. You don't have to be committed around it. It might not be a fit in some way, so we'll talk about it. But if one-on-one is not your thing, there's no reason to come talk to me. Just join the Jumpstart group. Click on the link in the description and you'll see a description of my 1 month group mentorship in which I show people, I jumpstart their KI practice so they have that practice after that month. Some people then go on to one-on-one mentorship and some people just do KI on their own after that month. Thank you.